Jennifer Crumbly convicted of four counts of involuntary manslaughter for her role in her son's mass shooting at Oxford High School. Her role mainly being negligence is what the argument has been for quite some time as the mother of the mass shooter at Oxford High. And I think it marks a significant case, obviously, Kevin, in holding parents accountable for their children's actions. Obviously disagreement on this, but the jury, they agreed.
They did. And, you know, I was not a huge fan of this, Tom. I thought, you know, to charge the parents, they should be part of the conspiracy. They should have helped plan it out or something. But I said, look, there's obviously a lot of problems with these parents. Go ahead, let them charge. Let the system play it out. Take it, make the case, take it to a jury. That's what they did. They got a guilty verdict. And I wasn't there for all of the trials. So I'm down with this. I'm good with this. I hope it sends a message to other parents to pay attention. And I hope it prevents other school shootings.
Sure.
And I hope it saves lives. Yeah. And I hope it doesn't become a slippery slope of charging parents for their kids' crimes. But let's get into this one with Todd Flood with Flood Law. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm great.
Appreciate you being here. We're getting a lot of reaction. We're starting to hear from some of the jurors, the foreman anyway, at least, about what their thoughts were. As you look at this, what do you think convinced the jury to go guilty unanimously?
I think if you just start on November 30th and you look at the meeting that the defendant had with the principal, the counselors, and others, and you see that diagram. If you had that diagram in front of you and you just looked at it for a minute and saw the gun that was drawn on there with the identical gun that the defendant gave to her son. If you look at the imaging and the words that go along with it, blood everywhere, thoughts don't stop, and a person shot twice, just start with that and then go backwards. But what would a reasonable parent do under those circumstances? I can assure you the three of us here would have said something to our son. And especially if the school would have said, you know, you need to get him into counseling right away. I would have called work up and said, I can't come in today. But, you know, neither here nor there. That's not extraordinary effort by us. That's not extraordinary. That's just ordinary care. Keep on going back. They locked the kid out the night before. There was messaging shown that, you know, the defendant knew about her son's plight. So this is not a case that is of first impression from the standpoint of holding parents accountable. It is the first in our history in the United States that a mass shooter was in this position where the mother and the father gave the kid the gun knowing he had mental issues. So, but we've had, just look at Virginia, you know, mother is charged because the 6-year-old takes a gun into a school and shoots the teacher and injures her. This is, I think, a fact-based case. And I am hopeful that this is not now all of a sudden going to drive knee-jerk reactions. Because, you know, for prosecutors to charge crazy cases, this wasn't that. This was based on facts. And due process won, right? They put it up in front of a jury. It went all the way up to the Court of Appeals prior to that. The Court of Appeals and the conservative court at that said there was enough probable cause for a crime to be shown and probable cause that this person did it. So it went to a trial. I think I'm with you, Kevin. I think it was a fact-based case, and it was the right verdict. And it's not new. It's not new to us in the state of Michigan.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in the system, and they brought it. They put the evidence out there. Jury looked at it, and they had a unanimous conviction. So I have no problem with it. I'm curious. I guess this is speculation, maybe not fair, but is there a point where the jury may have gone the other way? Say she did stay home. Say she did call and take him right to a counselor that day, and she talked to her son. Would those three things be enough, or would she have had to call police as well? Would you have to turn your kid in? How far do you have to go, do you think, to meet some sort of burden of responsibility that would not lead to a crime?
So the standard and the jury instruction says ordinary care. To get to gross negligence, you know, you have to have a lack of giving ordinary care. Had she just done it, hey, Ethan, where's the gun? Or Ethan, to the shooter, what's in your backpack? Or to her husband who was in the room with her, do we know where this gun's at right now? Or to tell, the principal, we did buy him a gun for Christmas, something of that extent. Those are steps of ordinary care that I think vitiate or cure her criminal responsibility. The jury foreperson had mentioned to her or to the media that, and left it at this, that she was the last adult with the gun as they understood the facts. So I think if there would have been just a step in the direction of caring, she truncated that meeting to 11 minutes and said she had to get back to work. She said she wouldn't change anything except for she would have shot us. Not that I would have wanted the gun taken away. Not that I would have, wanted these four lives back. And the others that were shot, their injuries not to have taken place. None of that. So how did she look at this world? It seemed to be she was self-serving statements. And when you watch that police video, she's asking the question why, as opposed to and then leaving her son, as opposed to the husband in this case. He's devastated, but and I love you, I love you. You could see him in a different position. So I don't know. I just thought the government and the prosecution in this case had the facts, and they charged this case based on facts and law. And we've had, one case that we've talked about in the past where a young lady, a young girl, 8 years of age, lit a house on fire. Parents knew she had issues with lighting things on fire. It was an apartment complex and killed the child. The parent was then charged with involuntary manslaughter for not keeping these matches and incendiary devices out of her hands. So that's all the way up to the Court of Appeals. It was reasonably foreseeable if you put something of a dangerous weapon in this young lady's hands that a bad thing would happen. It's the same thing in this case. You put a gun, think about it, guys, a gun into this kid's hands, and you see all his disturbances. It didn't take a rocket scientist to figure out something bad was going to happen with this.
Yeah, the gun is probably one of the biggest things. And her statement about, she wouldn't have done anything differently. I would have thought as a parent that, listen, looking back, knowing what I know now, this is what I would have done differently. But I don't know how much she was listening to her own attorneys on that and how much of that was just her own statements, her own feelings. Very much appreciate your perspective on this. Todd Flood, attorney at Flood Law. Thanks so much, Todd. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Yeah, it's difficult, Kevin. I mean, how do you predict violent behavior? And is it necessary now for families to know all the potential scenarios that await their kids?
Well, when you see something, say something. But if you're the parent, you better say something. Better do something. If you do nothing, this might be your plight.
We'll be getting into your calls in just a bit here at 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR.